Coming up on Philosophy Talk.
The poster with the enormous face gazed from the wall. It was one of those pictures which are so contrived that the eyes follow you about when you move. Big Brother is watching you.
The new surveillance society, Big Brother grows up.
Every breath you take, and every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you.
How much information do you give away every day?
I think that what we need is something like a Surgeon General for digital information.
Our guest is Christopher Nichols from Oregon State University.
In human history, there has never been more surveillance of individuals by the state and individuals by private entities, and we simply do not have a very effective lobby to push for our digital rights.
The new surveillance society.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk.
This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the Oregon State University campus in Corvallis.
Our thinking originates down the road at Stanford University, one of the lesser Pac-10 institutions. That's where Ken is a professor, and I used to be, and I still hang around. We talk a lot of philosophy.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Today, it's the new surveillance society. Big Brother grows up.
We all got a rude awakening when Edward Snowden released a lot of information about how the NSA was spying on our emails, our phone calls, and a lot of other stuff. Many of us felt our right to privacy had been violated, and that Snowden was really a whistleblower who should be honored.
On the other hand, John, other people felt that Snowden was an outright traitor, revealing secrets about the capacities the NSA had developed to keep America safe. And some of those people said to him, "If you don't like it, dude, move to Russia." And he did.
Well, Ken, what people think about Snowden will probably, for most part, come down to what they think about privacy. So what is privacy? Do you think it's something that we have an inalienable right to, or is it just something that we kind of have a privilege to have, but it depends on circumstances, and the circumstances now are we mostly have to give it up on behalf of national security?
That's a good question, John, a good question, but I think before answering it, we really need to make a distinction between two different spheres of privacy. One is what we do, our actions in our private lives, things like the personal choices we make. The other is what we think or feel or say privately to our friends or family. Now look, but this second sphere, unless somebody chooses to make what they say or feel public, then it's clearly nobody else's business. They clearly have a right there.
Well, Ken, you're often a little out of date, and here I think you may be. Look, if you look at what Americans do these days, particularly younger Americans, they choose to disclose everything about themselves. Read Facebook. They don't care what the public knows about them. Everything they do, everything they think from the moment they get up till they go to bed, they put it on their wall or whatever they call it.
I think you're confusing two things, though. Look, the younger generation may choose to disclose an awful lot about themselves, way more than older folks like you or me would, right? But what you see on Facebook is still what they choose to disclose. If there are things they don't wish to disclose, they have the perfect right, the absolute right, to keep them private, don't they? Of course they do.
Well, they can keep them private by keeping them in their head. I mean, if they want to keep these things private, shouldn't they not put them in their emails and phone calls? Because, look, they know, we know, everyone knows that in this day and age, that's the same as making them public. Some hacker, some company, or the government, if it's a cell phone, if it's email, they're going to discover what you say. So what's the big complaint if the NSA, in addition to hackers and companies, wants to know just to prevent an occasional act of terrorism?
No, John, there is, at least there ought to be, a huge difference, come on, between social media and things like phone calls. I mean, if I choose to share something publicly in a social media setting with a huge group of people, many of whom I don't really know that well, then I don't have any expectation, let alone the same expectation of privacy that I have when I send a personal email to my wife or make a phone call to you. In a case like that, I have a completely legitimate grievance if somebody listens in.
Come on, Ken, do you think anyone really cares about your emails and phone calls? I mean, I'm barely interested in my own emails and phone calls. So what's the big deal if they collect my metadata? So long as the information being collected isn't used unless there's some real reason for it. As long as it serves the public good, what's the problem?
But what guarantees that the information won't be misused? Look, in Europe, that's why they try to safeguard privacy by limiting the information that can even be collected and can be retained about people. In America, by and large, there's no limits on what they can collect. They can collect anything they want. Of course, there are some limits on what they can do with what they collect, but they can collect anything they want.
So, two approaches. Now tell me, what is it you, as a law-abiding citizen, what's your real fear? Is it the collection so that somewhere in some office far away, lived in by someone you don't know and who you'll never meet, this data exists? Or is it fear of misuse?
You're screwing things completely up, John. Look, there's two different things. First, it's not just people who are doing nefarious things that have an interest in privacy. That's the first thing. And secondly, what's the government? Where does it get off presuming that I might be up to no good anyway? It doesn't have the right to do that.
So you really don't want Big Brother watching you, even if he's a really nice Big Brother.
You got that exactly right. No, I do not.
Well, let's see what a nice big sister, our roving philosophical reporter, Caitlin Esch, has to say about this. We sent her out to look for new technologies that have the ability to collect limitless data, and she files this report.
What if you could wear a device that took pictures of everything you do?
Sometimes the best moments in life are the simple ones.
If it could record your life, would you do it?
At Momoto, we love the simple moments, but we hate forgetting them. So we started thinking, what if we could capture those moments and create a true photographic memory?
This Kickstarter video by Momoto, now a company called Narrative, raised more than $500,000 to develop a tiny camera that clips to your shirt. It takes two photos every minute. They call it a searchable, shareable photographic memory. Then there are wearable fitness bands that record biological information, like movement and calories and sleep patterns, even body mass and water intake. Products like Jawbone Up, Nike Fuel, and Fitbit.
It's the perfect companion to your lifestyle. It reminds you to make little changes that go a long way. So you can show your friends what's up.
And then, of course, there's Google Glass. Consider the case of the now notorious fight in a San Francisco bar when a woman wearing glass was allegedly confronted by suspicious patrons.
I'm watching you. I know what you're wearing.
This is from a video of the fight that the woman later released. There's a lot of taunting and a lot of swearing. One bar patron tells the woman she's ruining the city. The woman says she's going to film them all.
Wait, I want to get this trash on tape for as long as I can.
Get out of here.
Don't touch me. Don't.
Then a man pulls the glasses from her face and the video goes dead. This scene has come to epitomize the tension between early adopters and regular folks worried about their privacy.
I was one of the fortunate 1,500 people that Google decided could be crowned as glass explorers.
Richard Cochi Hernandez is a professor of new media at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism.
I think that any new technology always has a bit of a fear factor connected to it because we don't quite know what it is.
For example, in the late 1800s, the first Kodak camera became available.
You press the button, we do the rest.
People freaked out, worrying they'd be photographed in public. Beach resorts banned Kodaks to protect their sunbathers. According to one newspaper editorial,
the sedate citizen can't indulge in any hilariousness without the risk of being caught in the act and having his photograph passed around among his Sunday school children.
But anyway, back to Google Glass. the device is like glasses frames without lenses. Above the right eyebrow, there's a small square of glass that can take photos and video. And of course, you can get directions.
When Google Glass frame goes behind your ear, there's a little bone conductance speaker that actually vibrates the audio into a spot behind your ear, and it actually feels like the directions or any audio that comes out of it is somehow inside your head.
Kochi Hernandez says he gets the privacy concerns, but he says it's not any easier to record someone using Glass than it is with an iPhone. First of all, you have to vocally tell Glass what to do.
Okay, Glass, record a video.
Then it beeps and the glass lights up. If you look closely, you can see a reflection of the image. But still, wearing the device starts to blend the line between man and machine, and it sort of feels like a slippery slope. We're choosing to incorporate into our bodies devices that will be able to collect limitless data.
You know, how far will we go before we begin implanting things, you know, in our eyes and in our skin or everywhere else? So I can't say that there isn't a bit of fear around that. But there's also a feeling that this is going to be kind of an inevitable thing.
And remember those wearable fitness bands that can collect our biological data?
Flex keeps you connected to your fitness goals whenever you're active.
How long before health insurance companies can buy access to that?
And even when you're not.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Caitlin Esch.